The world of special education has a lot of acronyms, and today we're adding a new one. We're talking about a BIP. Let me take it back a step. Most kids, and during their school age life, and maybe beyond, get in trouble now and again at school. But when they act out over and over again, it can be really hard, not only for them, but their classmates, the teacher. It can impede learning and also safety of others and themselves. So to help students behave at school, a school may put into place a behavior intervention plan, or a BIP. Sometimes it may be called a positive behavior intervention plan. So a BIP is a formal written plan that teaches and rewards positive behavior. The purpose is to prevent or stop interfering behaviors. Hello, special education strategist. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I am a mom of three, and I have sat at both sides of that IEP table as a parent and a professional. The world of special education can be overwhelming and scary, even for me as a parent, and I had the extensive special education training, but I got you. In my solo episodes of the Special Education Strategist, I am here to break down the IEP process, help reduce the stress, and empower you and your child. At the IEP table, I have learned to improve outcomes, be informed, be prepared, and become a partner with the IEP team. If you're new to special education, feel like your child should be evaluated for special education, or just a curious learner, join me as we dive in and strategize and take your special education worries to wins. So a behavior intervention plan, or a BIP, again, sometimes can be referred to as a behavior plan or a positive behavior support plan. The idea is it provides a roadmap for how to reduce problem behavior. Usually the BIP is part of a larger overall treatment plan or IEP, contributing to the learner's long-term success in an important way. It provides a written plan of instruction for addressing challenging behaviors and teaching skills that help the learner get what they need in a more appropriate way. It's a functionally equivalent to a replacement behavior. So what is a behavior intervention plan? It is a blueprint for changing behavior. In a formal setting, it guides treatment and ensures that everyone responds to behaviors consistently. It includes interventions selected based on the hypothesized or demonstrated function of the behavior with the intention of reducing challenging behaviors, i.e. what the learner gets by engaging in these behaviors. Less formally, it can be used by parents and caregivers to ensure that everyone interacting with the learner remains on the same page about a behavior strategy. Although a written document feels like a final product, please note that a behavior intervention plan is fluid, even dynamic part of treatment. Same thing with an IEP, it is a fluid document. It doesn't get looked at once a year. It is a fluid document. So the professionals adjust the plan based on the progress or lack of progress of the learner. The written plan may include criteria for gradually shaping behaviors, but it typically requires multiple revisions over time. We're going to dive in a little bit deeper, and let's talk about how we understand the behavior, prevent it, replace it, and monitor it. So first, when we're talking about a behavior intervention plan, we want to understand. By observation and assessment, we call this a functional behavioral assessment. And that may include interviews, questionnaires, observations, data analysis, trying to figure out what are some common triggers and typical consequences. As an additional step to this process of understanding the student and their behavior, the behavior intervention team should work with stakeholders in and outside of the school context to learn about any past or present trauma experienced by the student, because that background can then help formulate your next steps and better understand the student's needs. Consider the various events or environmental factors in a child's past or present life experience that could impact their behavior. Think about how these experiences shape our interaction with that specific student. So as we talk about this, I'm going to go into 7 steps of how do we understand this behavior. Very first thing off the bat, before we collect any data on a student, you need to obtain parental consent. Exactly. An FBA is an individualized assessment, so a paternal consent is needed. Just like if you were going to do an evaluation for that student, same thing, parent consent is required. The next thing you're going to do is define the challenging behavior. Be very specific in identifying observable and measurable actions. Ross Green, Dr. Ross Green, calls this lagging skills or unsolved problems. So we really want to define what is going on with this student. Once we do that, we're going to collect data for a minimum of 3 days. Reason being, we want to see the frequency or duration on the challenging behavior so that we can really document the behavior is a problem. What does it look like? We know that behavior is communication. So what is the student trying to tell us? The FBA process allows us to focus on the reason for the behavior rather than simply the behavior itself. Once we understand the why, that's going to give us more information to better support the student that we have either in our home or in our classroom. Think of it as the acronyms EATS. Everybody eats. So the four common functions of behavior are escape, attention, tangible, or sensory. So they're trying to escape something, they want to seek attention, they're trying to get something that's tangible, or it's sensory. They either need the input or the relief. What triggers, we also want to talk about what triggers tend to result in the behavior. When does the behavior usually occur? Who tends to see the behavior most often? When and where does the behavior tend to not occur? And where does the behavior occur most often? So when we're thinking about collecting this data for those 3 days, thinking about frequency and duration, we're really trying to get under the hood and figure out the reason for the behavior, that function that eats, and what are some triggers so that we can start building our supports and our plan around this. The next thing we want to identify the student behaviors to target. Which specific behavior is the most problematic? Is the behavior interfering with students, peers, safety, and or learning? And is the behavior frequent and or intense enough to warrant an intervention? Oftentimes parents will say to me or educators, there's a lot going on and they list a ton of behaviors. Let's again prioritize. What is the most interfering? What is the most impact on learning and safety? We cannot target everything at once. So let's prioritize and really come up with a strategic plan. The next thing we want to do is talk about the ABCs, referring to the antecedent, which is the events, actions, or circumstance that occur before that behavior, the behavior itself, what does that look like, and the consequence, the action or response that follows that behavior. So we really are observing and collecting data of what happens before, what the behavior is, and what is it after. And thinking about, is this escape, attention, tangible, sensory? You're going to collect the data for approximately 5 to 10 days. So you really can start to see a pattern for that student. That way, as you're making decisions on how to best support a student, that as a team, remember, this is a team coming together to discuss the student, what is happening, and how do we support that student? You want to make sure that you have all of the data in front of you so that you can better understand what is happening. So as a team, you're then going to complete a hypothesis statement and connect that to our functional behavioral assessment. The hypothesis statement provides a concise, objective summary of common triggers and responses commonly surrounding instances of targeted behavior. It provides a solid conclusion of that function of behavior. We then want to collect frequency and duration to monitor the effectiveness of the intervention that we end up coming up with as described in our behavior intervention plan. So that is our first part. Understanding the behavior, how to collect the data, what could cause the behavior, And we want to try to prevent it by identifying ways to minimize behaviors as the first component of the behavior intervention plan, or BIP. What can we do to help prevent the student's behavior from occurring? What types of modifications can we put in place before the behavior occurs? And then we want to ask, how can we teach the student new, more appropriate communication skills? What is a replacement behavior? We can only answer these questions and select the proper interventions after we've concluded the function of the behavior. The antecedent modification, meaning how are we going to modify what takes place before the behavior that occurs? How can a team provide access to student need for desired outcome upfront so that they don't have a need to use challenging behavior? What could staff do to either eliminate the triggers or reduce the frequency it occurs? And how can the staff prepare the student for the triggers when they do occur? And how can we modify the way that the trigger occurs so that this specific situation isn't as difficult for the student when it inevitably does occur? So we talked about understand, prevent, and now we want to try to replace this behavior. So we want to teach a new skill or an alternative behavior as the second component of the BIP. So there's three steps. We want to choose a replacement behavior to teach, detail procedures for how the behavior will be taught. We want to talk about when, where, and by whom is going to be teaching this replacement behavior. And last, develop a plan describing how the team will reinforce more appropriate replacement behavior. And in the end, we want to make sure that we progress monitor. As a part of our goals and objective, we want to measure both the rate of challenging behavior acquisition and the mastery of replacement skills. So to sum it up, effective BIPs require some practice to write. So remember the purpose behind your plan. Typically, you're going to create that behavior intervention plan for someone else to implement. So we want to make sure that the person understands exactly what needs to take place. The plan needs to be specific as possible, using clear, jargon-free language, and many different factors impact the usability of a BIP. From the overall structure and framework of the BIP to the smallest detail. So it's worth taking time to consider each component as you go along. If you are a parent, sitting at that table can be very overwhelming, but I want you to make sure that you understand the language that it's written, that you would be able to implement it yourself. As a parent and a professional, you really want to make sure that the goals of the behavior intervention plan can be understood by all. And why is this behavior intervention plan necessary? What benefits do you hope to see for the child? Make sure all of that is in there, that it is very clear as to why the student needs it, who is responsible for implementing, does training need to take place for the staff that is implementing that behavior intervention plan? Who is required to receive a copy of the behavior intervention plan? That is all that is involved, instructional staff, parents, administrators, anybody that can be involved in supporting that student. To sum all of this up, we want to identify key components of a behavior intervention plan. We want to develop a competing pathway based on the results of that functional behavioral assessment to ensure that we prevent problem behaviors, we teach appropriate behaviors, recognize appropriate behaviors, and prevent reinforcement of those problem behaviors. We want to develop appropriate, observable, and measurable behavioral goals. And finally, we want to determine the method for effective data collection to guide decision-making throughout the process. Again, I am your host, Wendy Taylor, and I am obsessed with helping families and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build kick-butt IEPs. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious time listening. If you've loved what you've heard, please, please, please share this with a friend. Give us a like, give us a follow, head on over to @learningessentials on social. Give us a follow and some love over there as well. If you need more special education support, visit Learning Essentials, where we provide individualized and systematic approach to supporting students with various learning needs and differences through academic coaching, educational therapy, and Brain Camp, which is our executive function model. Not sure where to start? You know your kid best. If you're wondering if they're struggling, if they're thriving, how to support them, if you're not sure what steps to take, learningessentialsedu.com has a free quiz. After answering some simple questions about your child, it will guide you towards the first step in helping your child be the best they can be. Hope this helps make it a great day. Bye for now.